Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Let me tell you something about yourself. Psalm 8 and verse 4, what is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? Now this inquiry is repeated in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 6. There's so many false doctrines and ideas floating about concerning man and his nature and what he really is. And many of them are actually plagues and destructive notions that adversely affect our daily lives. What we think of ourselves will affect what we say and what we think and what we do, how we behave and conduct ourselves regarding others. It will affect our daily manner of life and our values, our outlook on the things of the past and the present as well as the future. Now, this discussion today is designed to inform us and to remind us concerning certain things about ourselves as revealed in the Word of God, the Bible. We're operating, of course, on certain assumptions. When we say assumptions, we're not speaking of things that are unproven, but things that have been repeatedly been proven to be true. We simply assume that they're already accepted by our readers. Now, while we realize that many do not accept what we assume our readers to have accepted, we are confident that each assumption is based upon irrefutable evidence and can be accepted with confidence. And we make these assumptions. We assume that those who hear these words believe that God exists. They believe that God is the Creator. They believe that God has revealed Himself in part through the natural order. They believe that God has revealed Himself through Christ and the biblical revelation. They believe the Bible is the Word of God, and they believe in the deity of Jesus Christ. Now, when we read in Genesis chapter 1, 26 and 27, that man, and that refers to mankind, has been created in the image of God, we believe that. And since God does not have a physical body, but is a spirit, John 4, 24, this means that man is also a spirit being. Hebrews 12 and verse 9 tells us that God is the Father of spirits. This is one reason we know that people are not born into this world with a depraved, sinful spirit. The very contention is blasphemous, its reflection upon God. When God created mankind, He created them male and female, Matthew 19, 4 and 5. In truth we are, as Paul declared, Acts 17, 28, for we are also His offspring. But man is a triune being. Now, to speak of man as a triune being simply asserts that man is a three-part creature. There is a spirit in man, Job 32 and verse 8. We read in Daniel 7:15 that Daniel was grieved in his spirit in the midst of his body. Not only does this alert us to the fact that we are spirit, but that the spirit lives in the body. Zechariah 12 and verse 1 teaches that God forms the spirit in man. Our life is in spirit, because the body without the spirit is dead, James 2 and verse 26. At physical death, there is a great separation of body and spirit. The spirit returns to God at death, Ecclesiastes 12 and 7. And man does not cease to exist at death, as some have falsely taught. Death in the Bible is never presented as annihilation or complete cessation of existence. The spirit, even though it has not always existed and therefore is not eternal, it does not cease to exist at death, and therefore it is immortal. But man is also characterized as a soul. Now, this is a generic term, and the word soul is used in different senses, determined by the context of the passage. In Acts chapter 2, in verse 41, soul is used to refer to the whole person, as 3,000 souls were baptized. And in similar usage is found in Acts 7, in verse 14, when we read of 75 souls of the house of Jacob going into Egypt. But soul is also used with reference to the biological and animalistic life. Now, while man is alive and active and sensual in a moving body of activity, He is not an evolved descendant of lower forms of animal life. This false doctrine has been more destructive to the human welfare than can possibly be measured. Genesis 1, 26 and 27 speaks of God breathing into man's nostrils the breath of life, or soul. Man became a living and a conscious being. The word is often used interchangeably with spirit, as in Acts 2, 27, when it is reported that God would leave the soul or would not leave the soul of Jesus in hell or Hades, which is the unseen state of the dead. What is most obvious is that man is a physical and a material body. We are composed of the elements of the dust of the ground from which we have been made, and to which the body at death will return, Genesis 3 and verse 19. Life is real, life is earnest, and the grave is not its goal. Dust thou art, to dust returneth, was not spoken of the soul. Written by Longfellow. In 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 16, Paul spoke of the inward man as well as the outward man. For which cause, he said, we faint not. But though our outward man perish, the inward man is renewed day by day. Ephesians 3 and verse 16, that he would grant you, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with might by his Spirit in the inner man. Now the outward man would refer to the body, while the inner man or the inward man refers to the soul or spirit that is in the body. Again, in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 1, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Now the spirit of man is the person who lives in the body. It's called a tabernacle or a tent, simply a temporary dwelling place. We shall someday have a resurrected body, a house not made with hands. Now, while we live here for a few years in the body, at home in the body we are absent from the Lord. And eventually we shall be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. 2 Corinthians 5, 6 through 8. It is the spirit of man that is the inner man, the immortal part of man that survives physical death, but now lives in the body. As already mentioned, death, that's the separation of the body from the spirit, James 2, 26. And the Bible speaks of the heart of man, and that not with reference to the muscle or the organ that pumps blood through the physical system, but, as Peter said, 1 Peter 3, 4, the hidden man of the heart. It refers to man's mind, the seat of his thoughts and his power to think, his passions, his appetites, his affections. It is with his heart that he purposes and plans. It's in the heart that he has his hopes. He understands with the heart. He determines and decides with the heart. He hates and loves and believes and wills and remembers with the heart. Because of the heart of man, he has the ability to do what other creatures have not been given the power to do. God appeals to man through his heart, because man is a rational and intelligent as well as an emotional and intellectual being. God uses his word to appeal to the heart of man. Isaiah asks, come, let us reason together. Now this is the way that God communicates with man. He's given us his word, a word that we can know and a word that we can understand, thereby having the evidence upon which to make our decisions. And we can take information, and we can draw right conclusions. But man is a free moral agent. You are, and I am. A most unique feature in the nature of man is his capacity and his ability to exercise choice. Man has the power to act upon his knowledge and understanding in whatever way he sees fit. Now, this does not mean he will always act as he ought, but he can choose his own course. He has the ability to come to God or to reject God. God does not force himself upon man to do his will if man chooses to do otherwise. Man can either obey God or rebel against God. But man can and must and will decide, and man can choose and will choose. Now, to be sure, a man will be held accountable for his choices, and he will either benefit or will he suffer the consequences of his choices. And man also has a conscience. Now, this nature of man is sorely misunderstood by some. Some have falsely concluded that man instinctively knows the difference between right and wrong simply because he has a conscience. But this is not so. The function of the conscience is to commend man when he lives harmoniously to his beliefs and standards, and it will condemn man when he acts contrary to his beliefs and standards. It does not say that his beliefs and standards are either right or wrong. The conscience must be taught the correct standard so man can believe what is true. He must receive correct information regarding what he ought and ought not do and say and think and believe. One can do wrong, and his conscience never be violated. And such was the case with Saul of Tarsus, later called the Apostle Paul. But he persecuted the very Christ. Therefore, the conscience was by itself not a safe guide. And even as he persecuted Christ, he said he did it with a good conscience. Even so, we are not to violate the conscience, Romans 14 and verse 23. If one will willfully violate his conscience, he cannot claim to be honest with himself or God. And the conscience can become seared and hardened to the point that evil will have no offense to him, 1 Timothy 4 and verse 2. Animals and the vegetable kingdom and the plant kingdom, they do not have consciences and are not held accountable as is man. This is a most unique trait of yourself. Now, these qualities that we have mentioned, certainly they overlap one another. Indeed, they are superimposed one over the other, and they all operate together. But basically, you are body. You are soul with animalistic life. You are spirit with all the attendant capacities of those qualities. There is the inner man. There is the outward man. Man has a conscience to help govern him in his manner of life. He is a creature with a power of choice. And this, of course, carries with it an accountability for the choices that he makes. And while the physical body dies, the animalistic nature of man comes to an end, and that part of life ceases, the spirit, sometimes called the soul, does not die in the sense of ceasing to exist. It survives the body. It is the soul or the spirit of man that Christ came to save. This is the spiritual image of God in which man has been created and is considered by the Lord to be more valuable and precious than all the world, Mark 8 and verse 36. We are, therefore, creatures of two worlds, the spiritual and the material. What is man? Why, we can declare with certainty that man is a glorious creature, and this is the reason that makes each person really count and really matter. This is the basis, this is the reason to have respect for ourselves and for others, considering the soul or the spirit above all else. This is the basis for human dignity and the basis for the sacredness of human life. And the ultimate home of the soul or spirit of man, whether male or female, can and will be with God for those who exercise their minds, who make their choices, who decide to come to him following Christ, training his conscience according to his will and to his word, and then living harmoniously with it. You see, my dear listener, you are a very special and a glorious being. This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.